All right, so let's get started. So yeah, if you want to sit in the shade, there's some over here or some over there. So we got a lot of questions. I'll do as many as I can quickly, but thank you all for participating. Okay, question number one is, what is your favorite part of adjusting kids? My favorite part of adjusting kids is getting the love and attention that they give. Even when you are just like a newborn, I was adjusting a newborn yesterday, and I was holding the kid's atlas, and I just stopped, and I was just looking at how gorgeous this kid was. And the child's looking at me, and I'm looking at them, and it was like, it's like this magic moment, right? And you don't, I love adults, they're lovely and stuff, but there's nothing like looking at a little baby's face and having them staring at you. There's nothing like adjusting a child on the spectrum. Like, this is what happened on Monday. It was a first adjustment for a kid on the spectrum who's never said a word except for singing a song or kind of saying ABCs or whatever. And the mom sent me back a text a few hours after his first adjustment, said they went home and they went into the house, and he said his first sentence, "Take a bath." And she's like, "I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but this is what happened." I'm like, "That's no coincidence. You know, that's the real thing." So that's what my favorite part. Okay, have you been at a point of life where things don't go your way? Oh boy, that's a good question. And when you found a solution, it just kept getting worse. I haven't had that question ever, and that's a great question. So yeah, there's definitely been times where things don't seem like they're going right. It looks like every time you think you found a solution, it keeps on heading in the wrong direction. So my answer to that is, you think you're going in the right direction, but you're not. And you have to keep on trying different things. And usually what I find is when something starts to click, it starts to click. My dad had a saying, and it was, if it starts off good, it continues good, and it ends good. If it starts off bad, it continues bad, and it ends bad. So, very brief example, we were actually going to practice up in Alpharetta. When we first came down here, we fell in love with the Alpharetta area, right near where Avalon is, that whole area. And back then it was quite beautiful too. So we were going to practice there, and we had set up a school for my son. We had set up an office, and we found an apartment for us to rent when we first got down here in 2001. And my wife and I flew down on a Thursday from New Jersey to sign the lease for the office. We sat down with the lawyer from this place, and he said, and let me tell you, before this, just backing it up, starts off bad, continues bad. These people were so mean and so unethical, and we're just such problems. But we were pushing it. And we said that we're finally gonna get it. And I showed it to lawyers. We paid all this money to get it. And the writing was on the wall, as you've probably heard people say, right? So we sit down with him in McDonald's on, I can't remember the name, up there near that Wynwood Parkway. And he says, and we were looking to get 1,500 square feet. And the lawyer says, he puts the lease down in front of my wife and I and said, we decided to make it 3,000 square feet instead of 1,500. Is that okay with you? I'm like, for the same price as the 1,500? No. It'll be double the price. I mean, we just spent, is what I said to him, we just spent 6 months hammering this thing out, and you're going to change it now? And he said, yeah, that's take it or leave it. And you know what I did with the contract? I ripped it right in front of his face. I gave it back to him. I said, you can tell that to your boss. We're done. And now my wife and I walked out, started crying. But it was very empowering in the moment. But what happened is we started driving around looking again for that next spot, and that's how we found the present spot that I'm in now, right? So we kept on hitting our heads against the wall, and then it got us so mad that we went in a different direction, and we found a totally different kind of location. So that was a great question. What was the most difficult thing while in the process of opening, and what's a good budget to start with? So I will tell you the most difficult thing to do what in the process of opening is to get your head in the game and keep it there instead of being so worried about all the things that you're worried about. My number one downfall was I was so consumed with the fact that I was a little guy from a little town who didn't know anybody in the New Jersey area except for my wife and my father-in-law, and that's it, you know, and that family. And I had no experience. I was 26 years old. I had $200,000 in debt. I'm like, how the hell am I going to make this work? And I spent a lot of time focusing on that. And I had to get my mind focusing on, like, good, clean, pure, powerful, and positive. So someone told me to start listening to, like, motivational speakers and motivational tapes. And so I started listening to, back then, the big people were like Zig Ziglar and Jim Rohn and Tony Robbins, who's still around today and stuff, Marianne Williamson. So I started reading books like those and listening to those things and going to their seminars. And that, I changed my brain, which changed the outcome. So that was really important, is instead of working on the business, I worked on me, and working on me changed my business, right? Because there's a saying, something like, if you work on yourself, you'll have a job. If you work on your business, you'll have a job. If you work on yourself, you make a fortune. So working on myself just changed everything. So, and a good budget to start with, I had nothing, zero. I started with zero. I had credit cards. I got three different Visa cards, and everything I had to buy, it was from there. And I borrowed money from my parents, like $2,000 from my parents to give them for the landlord for the upfront deposit. And that's how it all started. So I had, because otherwise I had nothing. So you don't need to start with a big chunk of money the way they're saying you do. I would say, like, I have a former intern who's opening up in Florida, and they're going small first. You don't go big first. You don't go for the 3,000, 5,000 square foot with the beautiful built-in this and this. You go for whatever you can find that's the cheapest, that's in a good location, right? That's what, all you need is a cell phone and a chiropractic bench to get yourself started, and a computer to get yourself started. That's really all you need. What method do you recommend to use to track or analyze patient satisfaction and feedback to continually improve your service? Ooh. What are the key things I should look for in an associate? The way we track and analyze patient satisfaction is we do patient re-exams every 10 visits and give them surveys every 10 visits. So we know exactly where they're, what's going on with them, and we change things based upon what's happening with them. So we had a patient recently who wasn't particularly satisfied with where her care, she thought her care of her kid was going. And I mentioned this to you before. And by doing the re-exam, we showed her that even though the child may not have changed much at all, but her re-exam was significantly different. And that made her buy in a lot more. So that's a big thing that we use to improve what we're doing. And the key things to look for is an associateship, no matter where you are, is you want to find someone that you're going to learn from. Don't go for the money. If you're looking to make a whole bunch of money in an associate position, you're probably going to be grossly disappointed. But if you're looking to have an experience, like if there's a person that you want to emulate, you know, that person has a very successful practice where I learned the business, the person has a technique that's very particular to that person, like NET is an example, and I want to find an NET person, so that's the kind of person you want to associate. Don't just do it for the money, because you'll be really disappointed. We had someone who associated at a, not that it's bad or wrong, but at a PI practice, and they were making really good money, but they hated it. They absolutely hated it, because it wasn't where their passion is. So they got out of it after several months, even though they're like, the money is great, but I hate this, because it's not where my heart is. I'm like, yeah, you got to go with your heart. Can you discuss your approach on settling fees and in managing financial aspects of the practice to ensure sustainability and growth? How do you prioritize investments in technology and equipment to enhance patient care? Very good questions. So my approach on setting fees is it depends on where you are, right? So if you're like in Buckhead, you're not going to have the same fees as in Marietta, and not the same fees that you're in Dawsonville, right? So every place is going to have different fees based upon that area, and you can go on Medicare, the Medicare website will give you like Medicare-based fee systems, and it will tell you like what the going rate is for chiropractic adjustments for Medicare patients, at least in those particular areas. You can certainly also ask other chiropractors in that area what they're charging too. Dr. Sid, who started this university, he taught us in DE, you accept all cases regardless of condition or financial ability. So for me, I'm not all about making money as I am about making sure that that patient gets care. So we also offer scholarships. So sometimes we have a patient recently, there's a kiddo on the spectrum and the parents couldn't afford our normal fees. So we said, okay, this is our normal fee and here is the fee for, it's half the normal fee for you because you can't afford it, because I just want kids under care. I would rather have someone under care paying half the normal fee than someone saying, well, I try to go get a chiropractic care and I can't get it because I can't afford it. Like, that makes me sad, right? That doesn't have to be the right thing for everybody, but that's the right thing for me. So I might make as much money as someone who's in Buckhead, but I'm making an amazing living and I'm changing a lot of lives, and that's what you all want to do too. And in terms of investments in technology and equipment, I will tell you that it's not equipment or technology that makes a difference in your office. Unless you're going into some serious functional neurology or serious like athletic rehab kind of thing, you don't need a whole lot of technology and stuff in your office. My office is the most big expense I have is our computers for our staff and our elevation tables, which are like $6,000 each. But other than that, we have a digital X-ray. But other than that, I don't invest a lot in technology because I don't find technology, not that it's bad or wrong. If someone wants to use technology, there's some great things out there. But I'm a purist, so I like giving subluxation-based care and neurological-based care, so I don't need all this other stuff to do it. If other people do, I think it's great, but it's just not my thing. Did you recommend study in the area before opening a practice? Oh, absolutely. What could be a good marketing strategy? Okay, so how do you study at the area before you open a practice? And I'm gonna tell you a sort of a funny but true thing. You find where there's a Whole Foods and a Home Depot. I'm not joking. Whole Foods and Home Depot have done the homework for you. So near my office, Whole Foods over here, Home Depot over there. If I go in this direction, another Whole Foods and another Home Depot. I'm in between two Whole Foods and two Home Depots, right? That was strategic. We looked at that when we first found that practice after we dumped the other place. We first found it like, here's this is good, right? So that's the first thing for our kind of practice. Now, obviously, if you're going into other areas, you may not have that kind of thing, but they have done demographics for you. If you do not have a Whole Foods or Home Depot near your area, then another thing to do is you got to go on I can't remember the demographic website that we used, but you want to look at demographics in your area and see what the demographics are, what their school systems are like, what the education is, what the median household income is, what the homes are worth in that particular area. That will give you a better idea of where to go if that's what you're looking for. It really depends on what patients you're looking to attract. But the key thing also to understand too is, like, in my practice, I don't attract just people in my area. So I have people regularly coming from 2 hours away, one direction, to come to the office to get adjusted, because we are so niche specialized. And to me, that's a great way to advertise your practice, is to be a niche specialist versus to be a generalist, because then anybody, you can go to anybody, but not many people do what I do. So you need to become that person in your area, is become that nobody else does what that person does in my area. And here's a great marketing strategy, how I open up my practice, both in New Jersey and here. Number one thing I did was something called a survey. So you're gonna take one of your iPads and you're gonna walk around businesses, not homes, businesses, in the morning before everything's really busy, and you're gonna walk up to each business and you're gonna see if you could talk to whoever's standing at the front desk, if there's nobody else there. And you're gonna say something to the effect of, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so, I'm a chiropractor, I'm thinking about opening up down the street over here. What do you think about this area? What do you think about this area? And then take out your stylus and start writing down the answers, even if you don't care what they're saying. Just write down the answers. Oh, I love this area. Oh, what do you love about this area? Well, the schools are really great. Oh, really? What schools? Oh, this is such an elementary and that elementary. Yeah, what about churches? Do you go to churches or any religious? Yeah, I go to this religious place. Oh, great. So what's the name of that place? Are you involved in any organization, like service organizations, like Rotary or Kiwanis or at the church or whatever? And write all these things down. Then at the end of this, you say to them, do you are you okay if we put you on our mailing list and send you some information about our open house? And almost everybody will be okay here, and they'll give you your, you know, business card. You give them your business card. But here's what's going to happen. One out of every maybe 10 to 20 people that you talk to is going to say to you, wait, you said you're a chiropractor. Do you take care of back pain, or do you take care of this and this, or do you take care of kids on the spectrum, or do you see kids with allergies or ear infections or colic? They're going to ask you this question. Now, that's called the hook, right? So they gave you this hook. Now you're going to reel them in. And this is how you reel them in. But you got to do a little homework first before you do this. So you're going to say to them, before you do this, you say to them, you need to find out a very special charity in that particular area that is specific to, let's say, as an example, there's a kid right now. There's a kid right now who needs like a kidney transplant. And they're doing a big fundraiser in our local area for this kid who needs a kidney transplant. So you find out about that. Let's say it's, you know, Jane's Kidney Fund, right? And what you say to them is, well, since you're interested in chiropractic for your son or for yourself or whatever, we're offering the complete exam in my office, which normally is $160 or however much it is. It's just $50. And $25 we're going to give to Jane's Kidney Fund. And you're like, you know about Jane's Kidney Fund? Yes, we're going to donate half of everything to Jane's Kidney Fund. Oh my God, that's so sweet. Can I bring my wife too? And that's how, so if you do that, our goal in my New Jersey practice in 1991 and in my practice here in 2001, our goal was to talk to 500 people. So I gave out 500 cards in a month to 6 weeks time. I got 30 new patients both times my first week. And from 30 new patients, every new patient is how many patients? At least a family's worth, right? Because that one person knows, whoever knows how many people, right? So those people come in and they start care, and then now you get their family in and the rest of their family. And now one person turns into five, and next thing you know, you're seeing 100 plus a week, right? So this is a really great, great, great way to start, is to start with this survey kind of a thing. I know it's getting close to 4:30, so anybody who wants to scoot, you can. I'm gonna keep on going and answer all the questions, but if you need to go, whatever, go right ahead. I'm not gonna stop you. And thank you for a great quarter. What do you think the most important thing when reading an associate contract? Here's the most important thing in an associate contract is you need an escape clause. You need an escape clause, which means that if, let's say you absolutely hate the place that you're in, but you have a year contract, you need to have a clause that says within, like, for any reason at any time I can leave, you know, and I have like 2 week notice or 30 day notice or whatever it is, but you need to have that escape clause. That is the single most important thing that I see, because we had, as an example, a former intern who went into an associateship that had a 2 year contract. And I told them about this escape clause, and she was afraid to ask, and she hates being there, and now she's stuck there because she can't get out. That's not good. You need to have a reason to get out. What has been the most eye-opening case you've witnessed in all the children you've diagnosed with autism? I mean, we've literally had kids who were on the autism spectrum who are not talking, who are talking, like completely, and have lost their autism diagnosis. So that's the most eye-opening cases we've seen, is kids who are literally 100% nonverbal and are now verbal, and fully communicating, not just partially, but fully communicating. Would it be better to start your own practice straight out of school or associate? I think it depends on the person. If you're not ready to start a practice, don't, because it's a big thing. It's like having a baby. If you're not ready for a baby, don't have a baby. If you're not ready for an associate, for a practice, don't start a practice, because it takes everything you got in the beginning to make it work. So my advice would be, it really depends on you. If you feel confident in yourself, then don't waste your time as an associate. But if you want the experience of the business or the technique or something like that, then I'd say being an associate is good for you. How do you go about patients trusting with their kids when you've had so little experience? So here's what my personal opinion is. You've taken some pediatric classes here. I'm gonna suggest you take other pediatric classes elsewhere, whether it's ICPA or some other organizations. And what you do when you meet people is you say, I have trained for pediatrics for X number of, you know, I've trained at Life University with Dr. Rubin. I've trained with this doctor. I've trained with that doctor. Try to peek in an office where they see a lot of, you know, kids. This is the way to build so that you don't have to you don't have to say, well, but I just graduated, so I really don't know anything. You know a lot. First off, as a graduate from chiropractic school, you know more about the human body and about kids than 99.9% of the planet. So you are already very experienced. And you just say, I use the experience that I got in my peak office. I use the experience I got at school. I use all the experience I got with all the studies I've done. So I'm very experienced. I may not have the age experience, but I have the actual experience of studying and being prepared for this. So you are prepared. So it's nothing to do with how old you are. I might be 30 years into this, but you don't have to wait for 30 years to have the experience. You have it right now. Okay, a few more before my voice fails me here. I just answered this one. I just answered that one. I answered this one. The best way to learn business side of practice is to peek in an office where they're doing a really good business, really honorable, respectable kind of business, number one, and take some great seminars. If you want to go practice management, you can do practice management, but they're going to teach you a very specific protocol, which might be good for you, and some people like that kind of hand-holding sort of stuff. But what I like personally is I'd rather learn from experience by being in an office or associating with someone who is doing it and then kind of modeling what they're doing. Just make sure, though, if you choose an associate or a peak office, that their office is an ethical office, because there's a lot of offices out there that might be seeing a lot of numbers and making a lot of money, but there's some crazy stuff that's going on out there, and just make sure you're not involved with that kind of craziness. What is the average overhead for a first-time practice owner in a big city? So in a big city like Philadelphia or Boston, Chicago, that kind of stuff, you're gonna be paying top dollar for rent. So whereas I pay like $3,000-something a month for my rent here in Marietta, you'll be paying $5,000-$6,000 for the same 1,500 square feet office there. And that's gonna be your number one, you know, thing that you're gonna be paying for is your rent. But then you also have staff. And staff, it depends on where you are as to what your salary is going to be, but you're going to have to be paying $15, $20 an hour minimum to have staff there. And don't ever open your office without staff. I hear all the time people saying, oh yeah, you can run a staffless office and I'm just going to run by myself until I have enough people. Wrong idea. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Regardless of whether you are a male or a female, doesn't matter. It is a lawsuit waiting to happen, because if you, God forbid, something goes wrong and it's your word versus their word, they're going to win. 100% of the time, they will win. Unless you have someone to back you up. And that's why you have staff. That's why I think an open adjusting area is good, because you got people looking, you got the staff person standing right there. I think it's a much, much, much safer way to go. What was something you wished you knew or had done right after graduation to better prepare yourself? As I mentioned before, the most important thing I would have done would be to prepare me, because my brain wasn't prepared when I graduated. They don't sting. My brain wasn't prepared when I graduated. I was prepared as a chiropractor. I wasn't prepared as a business owner. I had to prepare myself. So I read the books, Think and Grow Rich, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I listened to Zig Ziglar and Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn. I prepared my brain, and that's what really changed me is that. I did this already. The best advertisement method for a new office is you. You are your best advertisement. Now, certainly you can do, you know, ads, you know, on Facebook and Instagram or whatever. Those are always very helpful. Having a website is also very helpful. You can't If you do Facebook ads or Instagram ads, you can't just do that. You have to have a website too. Even if it's a Wix website that's free, you've got to have a website because you got to direct someone to what they call a landing page. You can't do it off just Facebook. So you have to have a landing page. And that's probably of anything I say is your second best advertising next to you is a web page. Even if it's free, that would be a great thing for you to do. Do you ever refer out? Yes, I refer out when I feel like it's not, whatever I'm doing isn't working, which is not often. But there are times when you have to refer out. For instance, we had, and I'm constantly sending out x-rays. We had an x-ray a couple weeks ago. I took an x-ray of this woman. I looked like she was missing parts of her cervical spine on the x-ray. So I said, I'm not touching you until I get someone looking at this. And it happened to be an anomaly. But that's a really important thing to do you got Dr. Fox and Dr. Carter, right? Use those people wisely so that you can account. That's like probably my number one referral is using x-ray. What kind of insurance do we need to on our office? So aside from malpractice insurance, you got to have liability insurance for your office itself. So God forbid someone falls in your office or falls outside your office, you got to have that kind of liability. And once you can afford it, you got to have umbrella insurance. Umbrella is overall everything. It protects you. God forbid you get sued. Also, you need to make yourself a corporation. Do not open your office as a sole proprietor. Make yourself an LLC or a corporation or something like that. And then get umbrella insurance. And this way you've got a bubble surrounding you. So someone who, God forbid, if they ever, hopefully it never happens, but if someone sues you, they're suing the corporation, not suing you. And the umbrella will protect you for that. So as a person, I have my office liability policy, but personal, my wife and I have an umbrella policy so that they can't touch us. They can hit the umbrella, but they can never get in. So that's a super important thing to know. Number one book to expecting mama is Well-Adjusted Kids. And that was it. Great. Thank you, guys. I'm glad we did this outside. And I'll see you guys next week.